All right, welcome back to the latest Mountless Wire Football Podcast. MWWire.com's website, Facebook, Twitter, all that great stuff. MWC Wire, Mountless Wire. Just search it. You'll find us. Jeremy Moss hanging out with Matt Kennerly. Time to talk some Wyoming fighting Craig Bull Cowboys.
Exactly.
We are, what, 50-something days away, I guess? Maybe?
52 by my account. We are recording on a Tuesday evening, July 2nd, so that number may be lower by the time you actually get to listen to this.
Happy 4th of July, I guess, if you're listening to it beforehand. If not, and it's August, we welcome you then as well.
Exactly, yeah.
We are talking Wyoming Cowboys, as we mentioned. They, where to begin with the Cowboys? I guess the biggest thing, we'll just jump right into it. I'm going to say their biggest loss is Scotty Hazleton leaving to go to Kansas State. Defensive coordinator, no longer in town.
Is it because K-State got a lot of props for hiring him away from Laramie?
I guess. He's a good coach, too, right? Come on.
Yeah, he is a good coach, yeah.
Very good coach. No, you give him props for that. Why not? If you go to the Big 12, I'm not going to stop you, especially if you're coming from a exact same job that'll, what, triple your pay, maybe?
Well, and he's not the only name of note to leave Wyoming at this juncture. Obviously Andrew Wingard, mm-hmm. Marcus Epps are both gone, Carl Granderson's gone,
Nico
Guy Evans. Gone. So like the most of the core that we've come to know as Wyoming has really kind of built themselves into a pretty competitive team, all things considered. They've graduated, they moved on to bigger and better things at this point. And so, Hazleton and all the rest of those guys really tie into this larger narrative as I see it. Thinking ahead to 2019, stability is kind of the name of the game at this point, because this is the first time in I think at least a decade, I don't have the season by season results right in front of me, but they've now had 3 years in a row where they've been 500 or better, and I'm pretty sure that hadn't happened in at least a decade. So with so many pieces leaving, it's tempting to just kind of abide by the existing narrative, like, oh, okay, they're probably going to fall off. I don't know that that's necessarily the case, but the more I looked at this team and preparing for the podcast, and I almost feel like I wish I had remembered what I said about Wyoming in last year's podcast. It seems like the range of possibilities for the Cowboys going into this fall is perhaps wider than any other team in the conference. It seems like anything is possible for this team.
You're probably right. And just to answer your question, it was back in the WAC days, mm-hmm. where they went in 1995 to 1999, where they are 500 or better.
There you go.
That includes a 10-2 top 22, last time they've been ranked as well, number 22 in the AP poll, Joe Tiller's final year before, I'm assuming he went to Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So that's been a while. But you're right, where that those other players, you mentioned a range of outcome. Defense should still be fine. For me, you heard pretty nice about earlier about what they lost. They still had zero offense last year. Nico Evans did the best he could, but I'm still not sold on any type of quarterback play leading them to success. Overall, or let me rephrase it, that position leading them to success. Other positions may, but not that spot.
Well, and I think that ties into, if you're a fan of mystery.
Oh, boy.
Wyoming's the team for you this year.
Wyoming's a team for you. Oh my gosh. Like a murder mystery podcast, the murder minute. What are you talking about here? What type of mystery is this? Or is this just a good old Ocean's 11 heist?
Just in the sense that you don't know how things are going to unfold for any number of reasons. And maybe that's a good segue to our talking about the quarterback situation, which for my money is the most interesting question in the entire Mountain West. Because we know that Shawn Chambers is going to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we know what he was able to do in limited time as the starter last year. He played 4 games, and quite frankly, he was the shot in the arm that the offense really needed at that juncture of 2018. He averaged about 5.6 yards per carry. His opportunity rate, which is, for those of you who don't follow along with Bill Connolly, again, you should. But that's just, when the offensive line's done its job, how often is a runner getting more than 5 yards? His opportunity rate was on par with Nico Evans. They were both right around 52% last year. Their success rate, which was basically just, 50% of the yards you need on first down, 70% on second down, and 100% on either third and fourth down. They were both 1 and 2, Evans and Chambers, on the team at around 44%. And it's not like the gap between them and everybody else was insignificant. They were way ahead of other contributors on offense last year. But it was only four games.
And Chambers is a quarterback, so him relying to run the ball, not really what you want to see happen.
And, you know, on the season, they still only finished 95th in S&P Plus on offense as a whole. So,
seems generous.
You know, what now? You know, and throw in the fact that he only threw 25 passes. They didn't really need him to throw the football so much because he was so good at running it. Him and Evans were just kind of a devastating 1-2 punch. And so, you know, at some point, you know, you want to see that small sample and say, yeah, there's definitely some upside there. But I think when you take a step back and realize, yeah, it's still a small sample size, we still don't really know where the baseline of expectation is. I mean, I think maybe if you compare him to what Tyler Vanderwall did in his extended time under center last year, you know, I mean, that might be setting the benchmark a little bit low because, you know, Vanderwall only had 5 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and a completion rate of under 50%. He just wasn't getting it done, which is why Chambers got the job in the first place. But again, we don't really know what he's going to do, which makes it so interesting.
Yeah, and he went, I don't recall, because the Air Force game he barely played, it looks like, so he had -1 yards. He did go, I guess, 3-1.
Yeah, that was when he got injured.
Okay, so 2-1 as a starter. He mentioned the 3-1 because Utah State, it was it was an Air Force game. But I want to see him pass. Like, run the ball's fine. Maybe that's what they're going to move to doing, run more. But they have a new running back, which we'll get to. He's going to be the starter, but I want to see, like, you can't rely on your quarterback in an offense that's not meant to have the quarterback run do that well. You know what I mean? It's not like they're running option-based or read-option-type plays where he's going to get consistently 60 to 100 yards. That's not their offense.
Well, see, that's the thing. Maybe it is, though.
Maybe it should be, right?
Well, and the reason I say that is when you go back and look at just how often they were running the ball last year, they were pretty much running it almost as frequently as any team in the country that wasn't running the triple option last year.
That's true, but maybe they should just change that, right? Adjust to what you have.
Perhaps, yeah. But, you know, maybe that's a good allusion toward the running back situation because all of a sudden, you know, that last year Nico Evans was awesome, as I think we can both agree on.
He's no longer there.
Yeah. And Xavien Valade does look like a keeper because he, too, played really well when he had more of an opportunity to do so. But is he going to be the kind of athlete that can do it all himself? Or is it going to be more like 2017 when they had, you know, multiple guys trying to step up and be that number one guy? I don't know necessarily that he's going to be on the level of a Brian Hill.
That's pretty high praise. He set plenty of records.
Do they need him to be? Especially when you look at the running back situation behind him, and all of a sudden there's a lot of questions because Jovan Bigelow is no longer in the program. If I remember correctly, Rio Jackson was a redshirt freshman. He's also out of the program too. And they did bring in a grad transfer from Louisville and Trey Smith. But behind them, there's a lot of unproven guys. You're starting to look at, you know, incoming freshmen like Titus Swen, for instance, who, you know, ran for over 1,800 yards in his last year of high school. But, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how that shakes out, or if they need Valade to be that 200 carry back.
Okay, quick note here. I want to bring this up just because by the time this airs, this will be out. Our top 50 countdown is ongoing.
Yes.
Sean Chambers is 45th.
Mm-hmm.
Does that surprise you since he's only in, what, 4 of the rankings or 3?
It surprised me a little bit, yeah. I didn't have him in my top 50, if that's what you're asking.
Neither did I. We had 2 people put him, I can say who, because I don't want to, if people fill the rankings out of line or whatever, but 11, 12, and a good old, what's this last one here? 34 was good enough. But if you noticed, what did we have, 104 players, 100-plus players on the list?
107.
107. It's actually top 52 now, so it's not top 50 this year because of ties.
Well, and maybe going back to that real quick, if you didn't look at Bill Connolly's Wyoming preview, which I think came out back in April, he had a really interesting comp for Chambers in Colin Klein, the former Kansas State quarterback.
That's really good.
You know, was a pretty efficient passer, but was also really well known as a guy who could be a really tough runner as well. So if Chambers can stay healthy, and I think that that applies to Valladay as well, if they can both stay healthy, I think the upside is definitely there.
But do you believe it? That's my question for you.
That is really difficult to say because, and I don't know that there's ever going to be a better time to really shoehorn this other part of the narrative going into 2019.
Shoehorn away.
Injuries played a huge role last year on both sides of the ball, and they continued to do so into spring ball too. I'm trying to pull up this list from Davis Potter at the Casper Star Tribune. You know, he had a list of guys who were held out of spring practice for some stretch of time just because they were trying to, you know, be very cautious with guys. So I'm just going to read this list to you.
Okay, do it.
So three offensive linemen, Alonzo Velasquez, Eric Abagiae, Patrick Arnold. Defensive ends, Garrett Kroll and Josiah Hall. Linebacker, Kash Malua. Austin Conway at wide receiver, Tyler Hall and Keon Blankenbaker in the defensive backfield. And that doesn't even account for the fact that they've already lost two offensive line for the entire season. You know, they lost Gavin Rush and they lost Zach Watts. So, you know, injuries, I mean, we say this for every team, but that's the kind of thing that they were really snake bitten by last year. And in some ways they were able to kind of hang in there, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and be successful anyway. But if that's the kind of thing that bites them again, that could potentially throw whatever depth that they're building into question.
Well, it definitely would. And losing those amount of guys, offensive linemen, for this upcoming year, if you lose any sort of guys, especially at this level too, it's like how deep can you go in your teams? Especially at this level, you're not great getting the same talent as like the Pac-12 or Big Ten, where you can plug in your number three guy and it'll probably be okay. Here, if you go behind your two deep, you're kind of screwed essentially. So if they can't keep these guys on the field and protect it, especially if it's the lineman protecting the quarterback, it'll mess with timing. It'll mess with if he's going to run the ball a bunch. It's going to hurt a lot of things to not allow them to be as good as they were. Because last year I did sleep on them at the end of the year. I'm like, there's no way they're winning enough games to be bowl eligible. They end up winning those final four. So they do have guys who played who were hurt last year who kind of stepped up. But you got to, if you don't have guys ready to go, or you just won't, because you can put in two freshmen in there. You know what I mean? If you're playing week six and you have to put in some guy who's played half a game, it's like you're not going to do well if that's the case. They need to get these guys healthy out, and it'll take, if it's a practice thing, if it's just freak injuries or fluke things that happen. It's just a big part. It's not just one, it's any team at level. So it's like if you don't have guys out there ready to play, that's what you need to do, get all these people ready to play who are had to step in during spring camp.
If you're looking for upside with what we think this offense wants to do, this might be the only time in these team previews we get to mention fullbacks.
Oh boy. Second time in Air Force.
Because it looks like the Cowboys may have identified the guy who's going to be their number one lead back in Skylar Miller, who's a Wyoming native, and he got really high marks. Got really high marks coming out of spring ball as well. So he might be, you know, another Drew Van Manen type, where maybe he's not going to light up the stat sheet, but he's going to be absolutely critical to what Craig Bull and company wants to do. But conversely, I think if you're looking for potential risk, you go back and you look at that depth chart that Wyoming put out at the end of spring ball, and you look at that offensive line in particular. One, there are zero seniors anywhere on the two deep. They do have a pair of juniors on the right side of the line in Logan Harris and Alonzo Velasquez, but they're asking a lot of young guys to try to come together at once. You know, Arnold, Abagiae. We didn't even mention Keegan Kreider, who was a freshman All-American at center last year. He's pretty good. He's probably going to end up being just fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have a sophomore at left tackle in Rudy Stouffer. You know, they've got redshirt freshmen and sophomores backing up pretty much everybody there. So, again, I'm not going to say it's going to come together or it's not going to come together, but, you know, that's one of those big things that could swing the season either way. You know, if they fail to get a lot of traction in some ways, you know, that could take away from what they want to do on offense, which is run the ball.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they don't protect the quarterback as well as they did when Chambers was under center, because, you know, he didn't take any sacks. You know, when he stepped back to the ball, but when Vanderwall was under center, they had a sack rate of about 9%. That's not going to get it done. So I think that there's a wide, like, again, a wide range of possibilities and what that ultimately looks like.
Also to mention, like some of those guys you rattled off did have a handful of starts last year.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's not like they're plugging in guys who are stepping in with no experience whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, there's a lot going on at once, and it's going to be, you know, a question of how fast that comes together.
Question for you. Do you have the Wyoming depth chart in front of you?
I do.
I have no clue who this is going to be. Who's their backup running back?
As of right now, the post-spring depth chart listed Jeff Burrows as the backup.
Oh, he's technically – is he a fullback or running back?
Well, let's see. He's 6'1", 233. Ooh, yeah.
That's my point.
That's a Craig Bowl running back, let's be real.
That's a Wyoming Craig Bowl North Dakota State running back. The reason I mention that because, yes, you have Valade there, starting running back, great, leading rusher. Chambers, QB, second leading returning rusher. Backup quarterback Tyler Vanderwall, returning next leading rusher. Wide receiver Austin Conway. Rocket Ishmael Jr. You get my point. Those are all wide receivers and quarterbacks. Your leading returning rusher is a fullback. And so I was wondering, who's the backup running back? If we're talking about depth on the offensive line, not having guys healthy, if Valade goes down, who the heck's going to run the ball? An unknown person.
Then you might start backsliding into a 2017 situation where they couldn't identify their number one guy.
So can we, I like to, okay, here's what, who is the backup again? I want to get the name one more time from you. Who was it, Jeff Burrows, you said?
As of right now, it was Jeff Burrows.
And you called him a Wyoming running back, a Craig Bull running back?
Absolutely, yeah.
I was going to think of a thing for a cool shirt, but we can't use Craig Bull's name just because. Fullback everywhere else equals Wyoming running back here. Ah, dang it. I'll workshop that because that could be something pretty good we could use. But my point being, who's going to run the ball? If it's not going to be him, could it be, I'd like to draw these redshirt freshmen who didn't play, but if it's the Burrows, maybe he slimmed down a touch. Because you can be a running back like a Mike Allstott type guy or who's it, Matt Asiata, who's a kind of a bigger running back who played.
Should be a battering ram, man, between the tackles.
Yeah, I mean, like
Wyoming wants to do anyway.
Yeah, it's like it could work as a running back. It would just be, who cares if he's fullback, but I'm just still looking for a guy. If he's not gonna be your blocker, he's gonna be a guy carrying the ball, be that goal line guy, short yardage guy, but they still need a bit more well roundness at the running back position, and that's just, hey, just don't get hurt. That's the Wyoming's motto. Just don't get hurt.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then we got a receiver really quick. I guess the big news is I assume CJ Johnson's back healthy, ready to go.
Presumably,
if he's back, that's a pretty good receiver. He's out last year. There are a couple guys from injuries, like even like Josh Harshman, tight end. But Austin Conway, I think he could be, and Rocket Ishmael Jr. could be they have some pretty good depth there at the receiving core. But again, can Chambers find them downfield to throw the ball to him? Because I think they have talent receiving core. It's just a matter of factly of getting them the ball from a quarterback.
That downfield game was a massive hole in their offense last year.
It was.
You know, especially when you go down, you know, yards per catch of the guys who are coming back. Austin Conway, you know, maybe he finally reaches his ceiling. He only had 7.8 yards per catch last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rocket Ishmael was only at 11 yards per catch. And most of the guys behind them, you know, I had never heard of whoever ends up being that number three guy. You know, they didn't have a downfield passing game. And late in the year, they didn't really need it that much.
They didn't have a passing game. Come on, be real.
But you have to imagine that at some point, you know, when you go back and look at, you know, and put what they were able to accomplish or rather not accomplish in context, you know, by explosiveness on offense, they were 97th by ISO PPP, and they were 120th by marginal explosiveness. Some of that has to do with the quarterback shuffle, the quarterback struggles, especially early in the year. But I have to imagine that some of that falls onto the receivers too. So they need someone to step up. But at this point, you know, having seen what I've been able to see from this receiving unit, I'm not sure, at least for right now, who that's going to be.
Like maybe it's CJ Johnson. But he had a different quarterback. Like, he's the guy who, yeah, he missed last year, so he's getting thrown, what, to Josh Allen throwing him the ball in 2017, right? That'd be correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's also one of our questions we're not going to answer about the Bills' win-loss record, so we're not going to get to that one, sorry.
6-10.
Okay, there we go. But, hey, Ed Oliver, maybe 7-5. But or 7-9. Yeah, there we go. Going backwards on both ends. But point is, maybe he's the guy. He has that deep threat capability when he did play. But You're right. You can't have a short passing game and just in a running game. You gotta extend the field because then they can push everything up forward. So if you do have a good running game, but they know you're gonna pass short, there's no point in having guys back 8-10 yards off the line of scrimmage. Safety's playing back. They have everybody close. So even if running back breaks off from the first level, there's a safety right there to tackle you 7 yards in. So you maybe have a 7 yard gain instead of a 12-15 when there's no reason for you to back off in the defensive secondary. And so they need to have somebody even at least pretend to go deep to have it be at least some sort of threat.
Well, in that regard, one thing I'm really interested in following throughout fall camp and into non-conference play is what kind of a role is the tight end position going to play? Because, and if I remember correctly, Tyree Mayfield was the only Wyoming Cowboy to top 100 yards receiving last year. And he only had 21 catches for 341 yards. He graduated. They do have Josh Harshman coming back, and he's listed atop the depth chart. But behind him, they've got a couple of very interesting, very Craig Bowl type tight ends. And I'm talking about Nate Wyman and Jackson Marcotte. Marcotte was another one of those guys that really turned a lot of heads in spring ball in particular. But they're both listed at 6'7". Wyman is 267 pounds. Marcotte is 250 pounds. So maybe those guys find a niche in this offense where, you know, they want to run between the tackles. They want to line up with two tight ends. And, you know, maybe they just keep everything between the hash marks. I see that as a possibility going forward. I'm just really interested to see if that's the way things unfold.
If that's the case, this offense might be boring.
I mean, boring, but they might, you know, boring will still won them 6 games last year.
It did, but still. It's like I get it. If you're gonna win, and it's not that you want to be not necessarily to be like wide open exciting, but I want to have my team give a little bit of spice out there. I don't want to just get 4 yards, hand off 4 yards, play action 7 yards. It's like give me a little something. Defense is exciting to watch. I'll watch this defense all day. For those who, what was our buddy Daniel in Fresno says, I'm always an offensive guy. I like some good defense, for especially Wyoming's defense. Logan Wilson's really good, but I want to see offense. You got to do a little bit. You can't just be extremely tight, like you mentioned, between the tackles the whole time. You got to have something because then defense will just pack it in there and you can't do anything. Because if you don't even have the ability to pretend to go 15 yards down the field, you take away a ton of your potential or a ton of the field to get things done. So they're going to have to at least try. Even if they're not successful, they got to try. Even if it's not working well, you can't give up on it. That's the thing. Not that they will, but if you're just going to be content with, if you're running games between the tackles, fine. If your short pass game's good, fine. But you still have to try to go downfield to keep teams honest against you. And you got at least do that. And I guess that's all we can ask for this team because we don't know how the throwing game's going to be because Chambers just ran the ball all the time. He never ran and was never patient.
And I guess we'll just have to wait and see how that shakes out.
When they open up against Missouri, that'll be exciting. Oh, boy. All right, so should we go to defense now?
Let's do it.
The favorite part is this So this defense, we can mention Andrew Wingard's gone. Carl, you already mentioned that, guys. Granderson's gone. Gaffney's gone. Not many linebackers are gone. Sorry. Marcus Epps is gone as well. So even with that, I'm still going to say his defense probably top four in the conference.
I would say so. And, I mean, when you look back at what they were able to do last year, the defense still ended up doing pretty well, all things considered. They did get off to a rough start in non-conference play. But by the end of the season, you know, they were still, you know, just, I mean, I'll rattle off some numbers real quick. They were still number one in the Mountain West as far as 20-yard pass plays allowed. Mm-hmm. They were second in yards per attempt allowed. They were second in opponents' passer rating, 9th nationally in passing defense S&P Plus. You know, and they were 24th in defensive opportunity rate. They were top 50 in stuff rate. And so when I think about how much does losing all of these guys, especially up front, which I think is where we're going to start talking about them, is it going to be a huge deal?
Trust Craig Bull, right?
Considering what they've been able to do in the last couple of years, you would think that it would. But there were some things that weren't quite up to Wyoming's recent standard last year that makes you think that the new guys who are stepping into more prominent roles should be able to match it. And one thing I think about in particular is the fact that when you look at their sack rate, you know, they were 114th nationally last year. I think they only had 19 sacks. that's not something that you would have come to expect from the Cowboys in the last couple of years. So even though Garrett Kroll is the only guy who's and Revonte Holt, excuse me, are the only two guys who saw starting roles last year who are back this year. Again, the guys who are coming up should be able to match that because they were still pretty good despite being tested again by injuries up front.
Yeah, it's like I mentioned, like what Craig Bull's done. It's like, why doubt him ever?
Yeah,
for a defensive coach, for what he could have done, even losing Hazleton to K-State, it's still basically, or it is not basically, it is his defense or defense back there, what he's doing. And yeah, they'll lose a couple of guys here and there because you always do. But like to go to our top, our countdown real quick, I won't give it away, but like Logan Wilson's a pretty highly regarded player on our top 50 countdown.
Yeah, that's because he's been doing it for 3 years.
So I mean, and yeah, he is. Let's see exactly. I'm not gonna say exactly where he's at. Maybe I'll give a little tease of what's going on. But he is ranked highly amongst our group, and he's a playmaker. Because remember, as a freshman, like he would just get the ball, intercept it, make plays, get sacks. He would make any play possible. But back to the D line, like there's a concern, like losing what Granderson did. I remember how many times did he basically take a handoff from the opposing quarterback. And take it back a couple times.
I mean, Logan Wilson's basically the poster boy for how it kind of sucks that the postseason all-conference teams are so rigid. Because he's been second team the last couple of years, which seems absurd considering how good he's been. He's the kind of player that makes you think, well, why can't they just have five or six first-team linebackers? You know what I mean?
Yeah. He is – I might say where he's on our list, but – let's just say you'll be waiting a while to see him on our list, right?
Yeah.
I, at one point, I'll give this away, I had him at my number one position for a little while, but I changed that.
That's what we in the biz call a tease.
So I'm saying, like, there, yeah, he was my number one, not defender, not Wyoming player, overall player.
Mm-hmm.
And also, for those who think it's for Daniel Fresno, I did not have an offensive player number one. So there you go, for me saying I only love offense, that's for you again. Two shout-outs in one show for him. But, like, let's get back serious here. I guess, like, serious as we want to be, I guess. We're never too serious. But is there – like, there is some concern losing those guys on defensive line, right? Like Granderson, Sidney Malua, and I guess Yohama Goffey was out for part of the year anyways due to the issues he had. He only played in 8 games. But they're going to need to find guys who can make up those, what, 15 to – like 15 TFLs to 7 sacks. They're going to have to find somebody. And maybe it's guys like Victor Jones, who's one of the higher recruits. He played 11 games last year. They have guys who played lots of games. They're just going to need to find who it is. And I don't think, like you mentioned, I don't think it matters who it is. It's going to be somebody who's going to be just fine because trust the process, right?
Yeah, and what's really interesting about Wyoming, especially up front compared to a lot of the other teams we talked about so far, is the guys who are presumably stepping into those roles are fairly undersized. They don't have a 300-pound guy anywhere on their two deep on the defensive front. You know, Kroll and Josiah Hall at defensive end are listed at 242 and 236 respectively.
Hey, don't disrespect Javier Jackson, man. 6'5", 276.
That's what I'm saying.
But he's still not 300, though.
I mean, yeah, I think that he's definitely got talent, but you know, between him and Holt, who is listed at 272, mm-hmm. they don't have that same kind of size that they've been accustomed to. And so, you know, when you look back at last year, one of the things they were really good at was stopping the run. And if they get pushed around a little more often than they did last year because they're undersized up front, that could be another one of those big things that really influences how the season goes in the long run.
Here's why that may not matter as much. They play Air Force. There's not really a big guy. New Mexico doesn't really scare me in the offensive line when they play them. Utah State has a brand new offensive line. The only offensive line that really scares them, at least in the Mountain Division, is probably just not Utah State, but Boise State, right? Maybe CSU. Yes, CSU lost a lot of the guys up front as well, so it may not matter as much early on. They'll figure it out by the time they play those teams. Season's halfway over, but like just in the division itself, the offensive line, and it's kind of interesting to think about now, the offensive line in the Mountain Division, I think Boise State has the most returning starters back. So when they face these undersized guys, it may not matter as much because, yeah, they're fairly new, but when they're week 10, it may not matter as much. But that's just kind of a little interesting note I thought of just now with the Aggies losing everybody, Rams lose a couple, Utah State, I mentioned Utah State, but that's the thing where it is. It could be an issue, but maybe not that big a deal.
Maybe not. I mean, especially since, you know, we'd already talked about Wilson. he's back. Malua is back. And Malua is solid in his own right.
For sure.
And the guy that they're plugging in at that kind of flex nickelback position, Keon Blankenbaker, you know, he saw a lot of playing time last year, and he might be the next kind of Wingard or Epps type player because he's only a sophomore this year. And oh, by the way, they have pretty much everybody coming back at cornerback, and that pass defense was awesome last year.
Oh, yeah. They've had guys, like, looking just kind of what they did, like pass breakups, force fumbles. They lose a bunch, like, with what Epps did, but they're making tackles. They're even getting sacks, like getting a couple sacks in the backfield. Tyler Hall had a couple sacks last year, a ton of pass breakups. Like, they're going to be fine in that secondary, even losing those top two guys. They have so many guys back there, and then guys who are down there in the bottom, they'll be fine. It's funny, too. Sorry, I'm rambling, but did you see how many defensive backs they have to compare to linebackers? Does linebacker position look a little thin with only eight guys?
Well, it's because they run a 4-2-5.
Yeah, it just seems a little figured a few more guys in there. But regardless, sticking the secondary, it's going to be – here's the thing, too. They played 4-2-5. Like, they have 1, 2, 3, 4 guys back who played basically every game. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to need to find a couple replacements, probably at least 3. But also, if you look at the guys who are probably going to step up, they're upperclassmen who are in their juniors who played quite a bit, but been with the team a bit, I should say. But they're going to find guys like the next guys in line, 2 to 5 guys, they've never played before. So while they got the upfront perfect, it's kind of a recurring theme here, depth. They don't have guys past the starting position at this who's ever played before. And so
that's definitely a fair point. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but their stars, their studs are great. They'll be there. It's like the running back. If Valade does great, but who's behind him? Like I mentioned, the fullback's the backup running back, essentially, the big guy. They have their base, their front line, their starting ones are going to be really good. It just depends who's going to come in to be that fifth starter on this team who's never played before, who's going to be probably rotate 8 to 9 guys a game, approximately when they go 5 deep in that secondary every single play, just about. That's a problem a little bit to look out for.
And to emphasize that point about the talent in the potential starting lineup, you know, if you go and look at Pro Football Focus, Tyler Hall was the second highest rated cornerback back in the Mountain West this year, behind only Daniel Brown, which I think we mentioned very briefly in the Nevada podcast, and Elijah Halliburton, who's stepping in at strong safety. He's the third highest graded safety behind only Juju Hughes and Tariq Thompson. You know, both of those guys are all conference performers. So if he can take another step forward, he might very well be in that conversation by the end of the year too.
Yeah, that's a good point there. Like we said, they're going to be fine. It's just coming back to a couple positions here or there and kind of is fine tuning the right word to say to find their to even out the off defensive line or defensive backfield about who they want to start and play well.
I think so. Yeah,
because they have enough guys. Like they'll be fine, right? It's like with here's units in the league. We know it's like we don't need to worry unless we see something bad. Aztecs running game, Boise State quarterback. You know what I mean? There's a handful of positions within the group. Falcons fullback, running back. There's all these spots within the conference where. We'll give them. We may be cautious, be a little cautious, but we're not going to just throw them down just because they lost a 4-year starter, a prime position. But they always have a 4-year starter who always does well. It's just who's going to be that guy. So until the defense falls off or doesn't play well, we're going to assume they're going to be at worst a top fourth defense in the conference.
That sounds about right.
All right, then we got special teams where you got the punter's back, great. Cooper Roth, can't forget about him, right? He is probably the best kicker in the conference.
Maybe. I think we might still be underselling him a little bit.
Oh, he was. I was reading my Athlon magazine the other day. I think he was second team All American, I believe, second or third.
He's getting a little love from Athlon and Phil Steele. Yeah, when you look at what he was able to accomplish last year, you know, he only missed one field goal from over 40 yards, and that was his only miss of the year. And oh, by the way, as a kickoff guy, you know, he had 29 touchbacks on 55 kickoffs. And when you look at Bill Connolly's advanced numbers, you know, he was not top five. He was second nationally in field goal efficiency, 28th in kickoff efficiency. He is the best kicker in the conference, the best specialist, I should say.
Oh, wait, specialist or kicker?
Specialist.
More than Savon Scarver?
Return? Yeah, I think so.
Ooh, this might be fighting. I think so. This might be fighting for some Aggie fans out there.
But I think there's definitely a conversation there. But I think it's just he was a Ray Guy final, or not, excuse me, not Ray Guy, Lou Groza. That's the other specialist award. He's a Lou Groza finalist last year, and I still don't think we're talking about how good he is
You
enough.
know why? Because Wyoming's offense was garbage last year. They didn't put him in position to kick more extra points because you want all the extra points if your team's doing well. It's kind of
That's
true.
a fair point, yeah.
It's not a knock on him. He's that good, but he didn't make our top 52 at 51, barely. Was he the only kicker that made the list, I believe?
No.
Ooh, well, interesting. I have to see who that is. Oh, I see who is a few spots higher. Ooh, boy. Fort Bridger Rifle will be exciting. It'll be kicking game, so we'll move on. That's what it'll be.
But I mean, going back to special teams as a whole, I think that there are still a lot of questions pretty much elsewhere outside of Roth. I mean, they're bringing everybody back, which is fine, but Tim Zaleski was not great last year. He only had a net average of 34.5 yards per punt, and his average, just as raw average, was only 38.8. That's probably not going to get it done. And Tyler Hall and Austin Conway didn't really do anything of note as
Hold on, you're
returners.
missing the positive for the short kicks. His net return is only 2 yards.
Oh, that's true.
Because they can get down there quickly and tackle him, because what's the far
Yeah.
kick?
So I think whether it's Zaleski or Dante Crow who takes that job, they'll need to take a step forward, especially if the offense gets off to a rough start.
Exactly. We'll see. It's special team, not to put it to the side, but it's I guess having guys back to have done it is good. They just need to improve here and there. Because here's the you can't rely on your defense for everything. If you have a bad punt return or bad kick return or kickoff, I should say, punt, not punt off, but I mean a punt, I should say, you can't have your defense put them in a bad position to, oh, great, we only kicked it. We're stuck at our 20. We kick it to midfield. I mean, you lose that battle every time, even if your defense is really good. So you got to help
Yeah.
everybody out. Got to help the offense, got to help defense. You can't just have a short field for your defense that allow the other team to start at their own 40-yard line instead of like their own 25 or 30. That 10 to
For
15
sure.
yards could is points on the board that you're missing or that you're giving up, I should say. So, all right, so let's take a quick little pause here. Grab a drink, do what you want to do. We'll be back to talk some Wyoming Cowboy schedule. All right, hope your beverage was enjoyable, folks. Whatever you did in that, 60 seconds, I believe. Wyoming Cowboys schedule. How did they get Missouri to come to town? What's up with that? August 31st, home opener.
Credit to whoever scheduled that game.
Hey, they've gotten Texas to come to town too before.
That's true.
So, Missouri, are they still ineligible for postseason after what happened last
They
year?
are.
So they're ineligible for postseason. However, they do have. I'm looking this up now. I shouldn't. Didn't they get a quarterback transfer? Kelly
They
Bryant?
did.
Is he
They
immediate
landed Kelly Bryant.
from previously of Clemson? And he is immediately eligible, right? Grad transfer?
He is.
So he could be starting. That's a pretty big deal. It's a big
It
test
is.
for this. Sorry, I'm starting to, as I'm thinking, like, I know this happened. I know this is here, but I'm like, okay, let's talk like this and see what happens here. He's at Governor, Missouri. You have a team where Missouri's like, they are in the SEC, so I guess that. Is that are they really still? Can we still? Do we really have to call them an SEC team because they're technically in the SEC?
I mean, they are, and they've actually been pretty good in the last couple of
Yeah, they
years.
made a division title, a conference title game, then lost to probably Alabama, I'm assuming,
Yeah, I think so.
and probably not close. But so they have he's staying with them despite their postseason ban, which it might. It's tough to play when you know there's not much going on. But it's the opener, so everybody's gonna be hyped, ready to go. This is going to be a test where for the Wyoming defense because they have a good quarterback for Missouri. You're playing it against it is SEC team. They have some talent out there, but it's not a team where I'm not expecting like I know the percentage of them winning is pretty low, but what is it 18%? I think it is. Is that what the S&P Plus says? The 13%. Oh boy, I don't think it'll be that big of a difference because if we know how good Wyoming's defense typically is, they're rarely getting blown out.
I mean, I would have said the same thing last year. And then this same Missouri team, excepting, Kelly Bryant was still in South Carolina and Drew Locke was the quarterback,
Still a pretty good guy.
dropped 40 on this defense last year.
They
And
did.
when I, you know, the one big thing that jumps out to me when thinking about this year's Tigers, in addition to maybe being like the biggest potential spoilers of all time, just because they aren't playing for a bowl or anything like that, they are loaded on offense. Not only with Kelly Bryant, but with Larry Roundtree III, who had over 1,200 yards last year, averaging well over 5 yards a carry. They may have the best tight end in the country in Albert Okwuegbunam. They got, three or four other guys who caught at least 30, 40 passes last year. And on defense, they are returning most of their big playmakers. They have, trying to look it up right now. They have Christian Holmes back at cornerback. They have, Cale Garrett back at, middle linebacker, and they've got, they're missing a lot of their pass rush from last year, but Jordan Elliott still has, 8 tackles for loss and 3 sacks coming back this year. And so I think, if the offense absolutely cannot come out firing from the gate, they're going to get blown out in this game.
You think
And
so?
I still kind of think they're going to get blown out anyway. I think Missouri is just going to be a really good team, even if they aren't like a 10 wins in the SEC kind of team. In a normal year, they definitely go bowling. So I see this one as a pretty comfortable win for the Tigers.
I would say this will be. When I say I kind of agree with you. I would say like two touchdowns are probably where I'd put this game at, approximately, hopefully. But it's going to be a good test because you also have like guys like Larry Roundtree who could run the ball for Missouri, who's probably be an all-SEC guy. This will be the best test for the defense they probably face for most of the year. Like, it's not going to be a win, but they have enough guys back. If like, here's the thing. If this is like week 5 and they're playing the team and there's nothing on the line, probably give them a better chance. But it's the opener, new quarterback, you're on the road, you're kind of hyped to play, even like not even War Memorial. But I mean, it's a road game. Week 1, they're excited to play. And it's not going to wear off. Realize, no, we're 8-2 and 6-4. We're not going to any postseason game. What's the point? Kinda. There's still gonna be a lot of adrenaline going. But I'm not saying Wyoming's going to win, but I would just say I'm hopeful it's going to be within 17 points.
Texas State, meanwhile,
Flip it, right? Flip the score. Is that?
I mean, when you look at last year's profile, Texas State really kind of strikes me as a mini Wyoming.
I can see that, yeah.
Because they finished 126th on offense by S&P Plus, but they were 73rd by defense. And, some of that was the fact that, even though they only finished, what, 3-9 last year, they had 3 games in the middle of the year that they lost by 7 points or fewer. They were, they lost by 4 at Texas San Antonio. They lost by 2 against Georgia Southern, and they lost by 6 against Louisiana Monroe. So maybe they were a little bit unlucky last year. And they are in this, what, year two under
No,
Jake Spavadal.
year one.
Or year, is it year one? I
First
thought it was
year.
year two.
No, first year.
Oh, my bad. Oh,
That's all right.
that's right. They fired Everett Withers because that program is a mess off the field, right?
Exactly. But, like, you're not
And
wrong. Like, they're.
for more on that, by the way, you should go follow our compadres at Forgotten Five.
They got plenty of stuff going on, yes.
But I mean, they have a lot coming back on both sides of the ball, especially on defense, where they're counting, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 seniors in Spavadal's defense coming back. So maybe they can make a little bit of noise in the Sun Belt, but if the offense can't take a step forward, that might be the kind of game that's going to be a long day for them. So I think that, for as rough as it might be against Missouri, Wyoming should be able to handle Texas State pretty handily.
Yeah, because they couldn't pass the ball very well, gave up too many sacks, 18 sacks, or 29 sacks, I guess we can combine everybody. Nobody can run the ball very well. They have experience back, but when your leading rusher back is your is a guy, well, I guess Anthony Smith's injured, but 312 yards. Any wide receiver is 311, number two running back. I guess technically, I guess their quarterback, if we're going even farther down the list. Yeah, it's not really good. Having the experience back is fine. Like, most of their defense is back, which could make this game closer just because we had questions about that Wyoming offense, but I'm still going to take a win versus Texas State and probably reasonably well because defense will kind of just smother anything that comes their way.
Interestingly, Wyoming is only 54% to win that game by
I saw
S&P
that.
Plus. That strikes me as a little bit low.
Figure it'd be about 60.
Yeah.
All right, so then they have a FCS Idaho Vandals victory.
Yeah.
Then they go at Tulsa, who, don't know what they were. They still have Phillip Montgomery, but he has a losing record overall, and they went 3-9 last year, and they're not projected to be all that much better this year.
Yeah, we talked about them a little bit in our San Jose State podcast, so I don't know how much we necessarily need to repeat ourselves. Suffice it to say, I'm still not very convinced that they're going to be that much better than last year. So I have this one as a Wyoming win as well.
I did too, just real quick. So is Zach Smith a new player on their team? Was he from Baylor
Yeah,
before?
he's a transfer from Baylor.
Okay, so maybe that could, well, that's not the same Baylor from a couple years ago when they're actually good. So they'll have a new quarterback. Here's what real quick we'll go through. They bring back most of their running attack, which was decent, like Corey Taylor, Shamari Brooks. They bring back a couple receivers. Most receiving core is back. The offensive line is diminished, but losing all conference players. So, or I mean, all yeah, all conference guys. So really good offensive linemen as well. So I think Tulsa will be okay, but and most of their defense is back. So it's a team where they have a few. Looks like they have a few pieces in place, but maybe not enough overall. I'm going to predict a Wyoming victory again, but I think it's going to be. This is a team that's more on Wyoming's level than we've seen all year.
Yeah, I think so.
It'll be closer than Texas State, but nowhere near Missouri. So, but I'm still going to say a win, put them at 3-1. Then we get to league play, and like we mentioned, all this other stuff before league play, we'll kind of just blast through this. I like they play UNLV early on because if Armani Rogers is healthy versus defense, oh boy, that'll be a fun one, right?
Plus, this is a revenge game for Wyoming.
What happened last year? I'm trying to recall.
Well, nothing happened last year, but do you remember the last time these two teams
Oh,
played?
69-66 overtime.
The epic.
It's one of the best games in conference history.
Exactly.
Okay, no, I remember that. What that was we're talking about why we can't score, then they score all those points.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, here's what I'll say for sure. That's not happening again. Is that a safe bet? See, there's not going to be a
Probably. I mean,
140
this is a
points.
really interesting contrast of styles, which we haven't talked about UNLV yet,
Yeah.
but the offense is way ahead of the defense. And Wyoming, at least for right now, it seems like the defense is ahead of the offense. So you wonder what's going to give in that particular matchup.
I'm conflicted on this game because it's at War Memorial Stadium, so that's always good, obviously. I'm surprised. Are you surprised it's a 62% win probability?
No, not really.
I just think if we're looking at strength versus strength, I would say UNLV's offense is. Well, no, I can't say that. That's absurd to say. Never mind. That's correct. Offense will be fine. Roger, maybe I'm. Let me rephrase that. With Rogers healthy, what he can do, don't be surprised if something he can make some good plays against his defense. I'm going to take Wyoming to win, but it's going to be close, and Rogers is going to have to make some plays if he wants to win.
I think this is the kind of game that both teams are going to need to get to bowl eligibility.
Ooh,
But
interesting.
I have this one as a Wyoming one as well.
It'll be a good one. Then they go to San Diego State after a bye week. I'm gonna say a loss, but I even though they're only given a what 24% chance to win, I don't like Ryan Agnew at all at quarterback. I'm gonna talk about that later when we get to the Aztecs show. But Juwan Washington probably might be stifled a bit against his defense. I'm gonna predict Aztecs, but I'm not confident in it because. What we saw the second half of last year for San Diego State, it's hard to trust what they can do because it's not what they've been doing the past couple of years. They've been struggling and been just barely average at some positions.
I have Wyoming winning this one.
What?
Yep.
So you're sitting there at 5-1 Wyoming?
That's right.
5-1 Wyoming. What?
And
What?
they're going to need these wins, and New Mexico the next week, which I also have as a Wyoming win. So
Wait,
I've got them at 6-1.
let's back up. Why are you so confident versus San Diego State? The things I mentioned, but you're actually going to predict a win?
Like I said, I've been dropping these hints throughout the podcasts because we haven't done the Aztecs just yet.
We have not.
We have not. I don't know how much I'm at liberty to say.
Okay, and no, not that. I mean, just about the team itself. Like, why do you? Because also, really quick, Wyoming did win the last time they played, 34-33.
I mean, let's put it this way. I don't know that UNLV Wyoming is going to be like a 69 to 66 fist fight like it was last time. I do
I
expect it to be
wish.
pretty close. And I do expect Wyoming San Diego State to be an absolute rock fight.
6-3.
Like 13-7 or something like that.
Here's the thing. I'm not sold on the Aztecs, so I'm like I said, I'm not gonna be surprised. I just think you're on the road. They do have an off week in between. I just think with the oh man, I don't want to be the same as you because that's boring. I'm not gonna fall for this. I'm gonna say Aztecs are going to win this one. Well, I mean, loses, unfortunately.
Okay.
New Mexico victory is anything to say, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is Bob David the coach? That's what I want to know at that point. Did they get Nevada? We already talked about Nevada. For me, this would be a win. Oh, yeah. I almost had lost there, but I can't do that because I picked Wyoming to beat Nevada when we talked about them. So, dude, am I really sitting at 7-2? 6-2?
That Nevada game is kind of the turning point of the season when you look at, and I don't have strength of schedule numbers in front of me,
mm-hmm.
but when you look at that stretch from Nevada onwards, you get Wolfpack, then back-to-back games at Boise, at Utah State, home for the border war against Colorado State, and then at Air Force. November,
oh boy,
if things don't come together, November could be very rough.
You're right. So me having them at 6 wins is probably what they need for bowl eligibility.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to beat Boise State. They're not going to beat Utah State. They're going to beat Colorado State. And Air Force, they're not going to beat Air Force.
You don't think they're going to beat Colorado State?
No. No, I do. I said yes. No, I said victory.
Oh, I'm going to say they've had Mike Bobo's number seemingly from day one.
No, I've Colorado State not winning. Let me put it the right way. Wyoming's going to beat Colorado State and retain the bronze boot or get the bronze boot.
Okay, all right.
Sorry if I was confusing people there. That will put them for me at 7-5.
Yeah, I have them at 7-5 as well because I have basically that same stretch where I don't think they're going to beat Nevada and I don't think they're going to win any of those road games in November, but I do have them winning the border war as well. So I have them 7-5, 4-4 in conference.
And winning just 2 road games all year for me.
But I think that when you look at what 2019 can potentially be, you know, even if right now, you know, at least from our point of view, if they aren't on the same level as a Boise State, as a Utah State, as an Air Force, I don't think that that means the season is necessarily a failure.
No,
because if they go 7-5, it means that they're continuing the most successful stretch that they've had in nearly 2 decades.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if things come together, you know, and they reach that what I call the 90th percentile kind of thing, you know, all of a sudden they're bringing a lot of those pieces back for 2020, and then you're starting to talk about them as serious conference contenders. But I think this year they're liable to have some growing pains, especially against the teams that we're thinking are going to be closer to the top of the conference. But that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, you're not wrong. No, they're like you said, the top half is pretty heavy, and they're not quite there yet. But however, out of those games left, if I'm going to pick a most winnable game, I think it could beat Utah State.
Out of that group,
yeah. Well, again, like I've been thinking about Utah State a bit more and more. Like I'm not a fan of them having to. I know it's end of the year, but replacing their entire offensive line. My initial record of 10-2, I'm feeling kind of queasy about that one.
I'm just going to point out that Wyoming's won 6 of the last 8 against Air Force, though.
Okay. Here's the thing: jaded with my Go Bolts blue sunglasses I'm wearing right now inside.
No, I totally get that. Yeah.
I know. I just think, like, Air Force is probably always winnable. I think, but this Utah State losing what they had, that's probably the most winnable game I'd say in that stretch. But if I'm going like best case scenario, it's not much more than 7-5, I guess. For me, I'd say their ceiling is probably 8 wins, maybe 9, maybe.
I guess I would probably put that in the same neighborhood because I think of the games that I have tagged as a loss for right now, Nevada and Air Force strike me as the 2 most likely wins. And so all of a sudden you're jumping from 7 to 9 mm-hmm. wins.
Yeah, because like I could see them being San Diego State and yeah, maybe Air Force, maybe Utah State, one of those two. But again, they're not going to win 10 games. That would be take something beyond X reason, I would think. That means they'd have a great passing game. The running game is just as good as last year. Defense is maybe gets better than the year before.
Mm-hmm.
But there's I don't think there's a huge floor. Like, if I'm going the other way, like, could they lose to Tulsa? Maybe. Like, the drop down, there's a chance they could also not make a bowl game, but I think they have a good, possibly four game swing on this team, or for the Cowboys team, I should say.
I mean, I think the floor, and like I said, this isn't something you could predict, but if injuries strike this team hard again,
4-8,
the floor could be artificially low.
Yeah.
If things fail to come together, especially on offense, they could lose to Texas State and they could lose to Tulsa.
I don't
I
think
mean,
they'll.
let's not forget both of those games are on the road too, and it's never easy to win on the road.
I don't think they're losing to Texas State.
They could lose to UNLV and San Diego State
Yes.
and even Colorado State. So I mean, and that's like the absolute worst case scenario is, if the offense scuffles like it did in the first half of last year, which again, let's not forget they started 2-6 last year.
Yeah. New quarterback. The injuries last year, look what happened. They still, here's the thing too. They did what they did last year with injuries as well and still were bowl eligible.
So I mean, if they go 2-6 again because the offense is scuffling, November's a lot less forgiving this time around.
Oh,
Because
it's
let's not forget those 4 wins they had last year were at Colorado State, San Jose State, Air Force, New Mexico. That's
yeah.
not exactly the class of the conference.
It is no, you're correct on that. So, with that being said, what's your official record one more time?
7-5.
Same with me, and putting them fourth in the Mountain Division. And hey, guess what? 7 wins. They're going bowling this time.
They're
No,
going bowling, exactly.
getting shut out. So that's our Wyoming Cowboys preview this time around. We're hope. I'll ask really quick. Me and Eli did our 4th of July podcast. I know we're not supposed to do timely stuff in here, but we did a side ranking of for barbecues. What do you got?
Tri-tip, number
No,
one.
side.
Oh,
Side.
side.
But also, that tells me right there, you know what a barbecue is, and Eli thinks still tells me it's burgers and hot dogs.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's
That
not
that's a
wrong.
cookout, it's not a barbecue.
I mean, we just do it different in California, I
I
guess.
get, well, I do it different places too. I told him once he's in North Carolina for however long he's been out there, then he'll know what a barbecue is.
He's a lucky man. He doesn't even know it yet.
Exactly. Also, did you know he likes NASCAR as well? He used to.
I did not know
As
that.
much, or even in his words, more than college basketball at the moment, which is hard to believe.
Very interesting.
But I would say this: how potato salad is my go-to.
It depends on the potato salad.
Mustard-based potato salad.
I agree.
Okay, would you just go get a thing from Costco or your local Target and have just mustard potato from there? Because I would do that too.
No, it's got to, you know what though? Honestly, it's got to be my family's recipe.
Hey, those are the best. But I'm just saying, I'll eat whatever it is if it's mashed, if it's potato. I don't care. It can be from wherever, and as long as it's cold, it's good. So we're on the same page in that. That's good. So we talked more about that later. But you know what a barbecue is, or a good barbecue is. So that's good. You agree with me on potato salads. I think we'll end the show there because we're correct and everybody else is wrong.
There you go.
All right. So that's it. MWR.com is our website. Our top 50 countdown is ongoing, and apparently people love it so far, Matt, which is good. We'll be
Thank you
doing
for
the.
that.
Being those updates every day. And what's the hashtag? Is it because you set it up this year because it's 52.
Yeah, there are 52 players. So this year, the official hashtag is at MWWire top 52.
Numeral 52.
52.
So if we do this again, which we will, we should just make up a number and not make it 50, like 47 or 56, just because. It's different, right?
Why not?
Just because. All right. So next week we will do another team. This will be after the holiday. We'll be nearing media day, I guess. By the time we next podcast comes out, it'll be what, week and a half from there. So we'll see how that goes. We've done Utah State, San Jose State, Air Force, Nevada, New Mexico, Fresno State. So if you want to go back and hear any of those you missed, you happen to stumble across us, like, hey, what is this show doing? They've talked about half the league already. Go back and listen to those at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you get your podcast. Download it, give us a review, and follow us on Twitter, MWC Wire, and we'll be back next week, folks.